Prime ministers
and presidents
may come and go, but the certainty of exemplary entertainment on the Midweek Drive
and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition
remains.
The birth of Oracle, the Tao of the Batman, and three stories for the price of one. Don't go loony, it's another edition of Resonance Rewinds. And I thought I'd actually start off this particular one by obviously welcoming our four guests, one newbie, of course, which is fantastic. But as ever, we have Robin Pierce, the co-founder and co-host of the very first Resonance Rewind, a good month ago now, Robin, since we started these things.
Yes, and it was a smooth birth, was it not?
Well, yeah, we like to ensure that things work our way through that. That's why we went for Batgirl, clearly. We entered within that. We also have been joined, of course, by our resident North Carolina expert on matters to do with SF, speculative fiction, and cultural matters, etc. It's Jessica Burtis. How are you, Jessica?
Good. How are you?
Very good. And I gather that your parents both enjoyed Land of the Giants as well last week.
Yes, they, and my mom says hi, and she actually watched the second episode, so I think they're a little hooked on it now.
Wow, this is what we like to hear. This is the whole essence of Resonance Rewind, rebirthing the whole thing. And, of course, we have our ace skater, who was basically, I would say, laughing maniacally just a few moments ago. I wasn't sure whether she'd actually just have a rictus grin fixed on her face throughout the actual piece, but no, it's Jenny Bill.
Good evening.
very good. Pull it back. Very excellent stuff. And making her debut on Resonance Rewind, though she's not a newbie to the Midweek Drive by any stretch of the imagination. Graduate in film studies from the University of Lincoln, it's Eloise Sheehan. How are you, Eloise?
I'm good, thank you, Alex. Hi.
Seems like a matter of, let me see, 5.5 hours since we last featured you on a programme, but there we are. It's just time. You've done that, I think. Okay. A couple of words from Mark White and fellow scholars in terms of Batman and philosophy. We believe that Batman is the most complex character ever to appear in comic books and graphic novels, because the stories featuring him over the last 80 years have provided us with a wealth of philosophical material to discuss. One reason is that he is just a human being, even though he is nothing like the rest of us. He's devoted his entire life to avenging the death of his parents and all other victims of crime by risking life and limb to protect his city of Gotham and beyond. And what we have for today's Resonance Rewind, of course, is The Killing Joke, a graphic novel of 1988, which was then made as a movie, finally released in 2016, and kind of dedicates its notion to the whole sense of British creators, specifically Alan Moore, who's uncredited on both, because he doesn't like that sort of thing. He is Alan Moore, after all. And, of course, Brian Bolland and more. Robin, that's the kind of background production summation of the movie directed by the wonderful Sam Liu, not in lieu of anything else. Where do you want to take us now in terms of a brief descriptor of The Killing Joke?
Brief descriptor. Okay, it's based on perhaps the definitive Joker story, giving his origins. Whole Joker starting off as a villain known as the Red Hood actually goes back to the late 40s, early 50s, where that was the only thing about the Joker's origins that we know. I mean, even though... Excuse me a second.
You see, that's what happens. He's just having a joke, that's all. He's just having a joke as he phones up there to say, ah, you know, it's just jam-packed full of those kind of things. Whilst Robin actually deals with his agent, who's obviously sort of saying, Robin, are you going
to... Hold a second, I'm sorry.
As well.
We pause.
You know, let's go over briefly to Jessica. Jessica, what did you make of The Killing Joke?
I really enjoyed it. It was very philosophical at the end, but I had a lot of fun with it. And I actually was really surprised at the beginning because the voice of Batgirl is the voice of Raven on Teen Titans, which is a show I absolutely love. So that was very exciting.
We are this close to putting Teen Titans into the Resonance Rewind system.
Really?
Yes, the Teen Titans Go movie is on our list of things to do. It's there. And you're right. And of course, she also, I believe, featured in My Little Pony. Not a series I was necessarily sort of keen to actually follow through, but perhaps I should get in touch with my inner My Little Pony, because there are lots of little My Little Pony in-jokes in terms of the animated Teen Titans as well. You're absolutely right. Raven, Batgirl, Barbara Kathleen Gordon, the kind of universe continues and expands, etc. I think Robin's managed to actually destroy his phone now, or at least zapped it for a few moments. So, Robin, we were in the midst of your, perhaps, the most famous origin story of the Joker ever from the Red Hood.
First of all, I apologise for the interruption. It's the problem of having the landline phone on my desk.
The thing is, Robin, I'll just point this out because it's a nice reveal I can make at this stage. It's a nice reveal. We've actually had confirmation in the last 24 hours that not only are we making these shows available globally via the internet and the web and our podcasting, etc. as well, but Siren Radio will also be running the Resonance Rewind package as well. So there you are, you see. You'll be appearing on Siren Radio too. I just wanted to share
stardom at last.
There we are.
Right, it's the definitive origin story of the Joker, relating to a story that ran in Batman Comics in 1949-1950, where we found out that he was a small-time criminal called the Red Hood and was accidentally doused in chemicals, being chased by Batman, which, of course, gave him his current form, dyed his hair green, turned his skin a deathly white, and apparently elongated his chin. Now, the interesting thing about the Joker in comics is, despite the films telling us he was named Jack Napier and all this, in the comics, we still don't know who he was. That's still kept blank. Now, this is the definitive Joker story because he's escaped from Arkham Asylum, and he wants to prove, once and for all, that all that there lies between sanity and insanity is one bad day. He had his bad day.
The phone starts ringing. It starts off from there.
phone flew to the other side of the room. Batman has had his bad day, of course, orphaned at the age of about 10. Now, what the Joker wants to do is to show Commissioner Gordon that there's just one bad day that will drive him insane. And he sets out, he escapes, to give Gordon the worst day he's ever had, which includes shooting his daughter through her spine, thus paralyzing her, and dragging Gordon himself into a disused funfair.
An insane hall of mirrors. Let's hold it there, Robin.
An insane hall of mirrors.
Because we don't want to go too far down the line of Carnival and various other things. A quote from Tim Burton, which I thought was interesting on the front cover of the original graphic novel. I love the killing joke. It's my favourite. It's the first comic I've ever loved. And the fact that Tim Burton actually said that, I think, perhaps reveals why he chose to obviously feature Jack Nicholson as the Joker in his version of Batman back in the end of the 1980s. Jenny, what are your thoughts about this? And again, if you're a comic aficionado, you might turn around and say, ah, yes, but there's another 30 extra minutes that's sort of stuck on to the killing joke, which tells us all about Batgirl and Batman, etc., which in the original comic book you don't get at all. But anyway, Jenny, your thoughts?
I'm not an aficionado at all on comics. I'm not a great fan of comic books, graphic novels, or even animation. Although, of course, they can obviously get away with sort of graphic cruelty and sadism in this that you wouldn't be able to in a sort of real film. And
have you not seen Quentin Tarantino?
I have, yes. But I did actually do a little bit of research into the film and the history of the comic behind it, and I can see that clearly they kept very much to the story. I thought the story that they brought in at the beginning about Batgirl came in quite seamlessly, and obviously I did read about Hamill being this, you know, the ultimate Joker, and yes, he was absolutely awesome. I enjoyed it, but I don't know if it's not really quite my kind of thing.
Okay, let's progress then to a young lady who physically had me physically deliver a copy of the DVD physically to her yesterday in Lincoln. Yes, Jessica, I went back to Lincoln the first time since March, and the good news is it still appears to be standing. Wasn't allowed to the university, still standing, as Eloise could attest to, because she now lives there and works there. Eloise, what did you make of it?
Well, I quite liked it. It's my first DC animation that I've seen, so it wasn't what I was expecting, because I'm used to watching Marvel and Marvel animations, which seem to be more thrown towards child audiences or family-based, so I didn't realise it was going to be as dark as it was, but I thought it was really interesting, actually.
A 32-minute prologue for a 72-minute movie, or at least a 76-minute movie. Interesting stuff. Okay, lots of material there in terms of the philosophy. I mean, you could actually turn around and say the well-worn chestnut about, are Batman and Joker two sides of the same coin? I mean, this was made clear in terms of the Michael Keaton movie, where the suggestion is that the Batman created the Joker, and we kind of see that also in the sequence here today. Did we feel that actually Batman was just too dark? I mean, it was only Robin and myself who kind of checked out the original Batman Adam West series. But for those people who are solely familiar with that, I have sympathy. And indeed, one soul from the Lincoln Book Festival back in the day said she was quite shocked at how dark Batman actually got, because he's not perceived as this dark avenging knight, etc. When we see the Joker in there as well, doing all sorts of nefarious details, including the assault on Barbara Gordon, Barbara Kathleen Gordon, of course, particularly apt name for myself, not only because obviously we have our very own Batgirl here, who's there, let's point that out, but in addition to that, my grandmother's first name and my mother's first name. So there we are, Kathleen, Barbara, just waxing lyrical on that. Robin, did you think it was too dark? I mean, it was the first ever R-rated movie that effectively was released in 2016, and obviously to great acclaim, although the perhaps arguably the tone had been set by Batman the Animated Series back in the 1990s.
I don't think it was too dark at all, because what came as a shock to me was an earlier graphic novel, which has also been turned into an animated movie called The Dark Knight Returns. Now, that sucked me back into reading comic books and graphic novels back in 86, and I'd swum off them for 10 years in a misguided attempt to grow up. That showed a very different dystopian Batman, older, more cynical. And I think that The Killing Joke does the same thing, really, for the Joker. Because he isn't the clown prince of crime, is he? He's a dangerous psychopath. He can't be reasoned with. He can't be predicted, because his grand plan in any scheme is whatever occurs to him in that microsecond of time. And by the time he's finished his sentence, he may have already changed his mind. So I think it's an interesting take. I would have loved to have heard Poppy's take on this from a philosophical point of view. You mentioned the prologue, which is the first 30 minutes of the film, which doesn't appear at all in the graphic novel. And I think that was just to establish the link between Batman and Batgirl, the relationship dynamic between them. But I think that gets it wrong, because they never had a physical relationship in the comics. He was more of a mentor and a father figure, rather than what he appeared to be.
Having said that, in the TV series with Yvonne Craig as Batgirl, as Bruce Timm was actually saying, there was a suggestion that maybe there was a sense of attraction there between, obviously, Batman and Batgirl. And of course, you know, she kind of acknowledges that they crossed the line. And you know, as a result of that, she becomes the darkness, or maybe not as a result of that, becomes the darkness. She almost beats to a pulp the curiously entitled Paris, France, which I thought was a wonderful sort of line from that point of view.
I think what's really interesting about the film, though, and the book, of course, is that Joker successfully, without even knowing it, ends Batgirl's career. He doesn't even know he's basically put paid to one of the people who regularly put him in prison. He has no idea because nobody knew the secret of that entity.
Indeed.
Because she became Oracle, but, you know.
As we said, the origin of Oracle. Jessica, I got a feeling at one stage this was almost three movies. So three movies in one. You have that initial Paris, France kind of mobster violence thing with Batgirl and Batman as the caped vigilantes, effectively righting wrongs or attempting to, etc. Then, of course, you have the Joker, the whole sort of essence of Mark Hamill's incarnation of Joker. And then, of course, you have the other very film noir-esque elements that we saw in terms of the origin of Joker and the Red Hood, the Red Mask gang, the Red Hood gang, etc., which again, the sort of lack of colour in that I thought was quite interesting. And packing all that into a 70-minute period I thought was quite effective, together with an interesting musical score as well. Any thoughts on that one from yourself, Jess?
I actually do agree with that. I didn't read anything about the plot description before I watched it, and so I thought the whole thing was about Batgirl and this Franz guy at the beginning, and then once he got arrested, I was like, oh, okay, so it's not him, and then we moved into the Joker, and so I do agree. I think there were, like, several plot lines that were all just mixed together.
There is a suggestion, of course, that Batman is all about balance. We talked about the Tao of Batman and this yin and yang, and that sometimes if the yang is allowed to dominate, you do become that brutal notion. And you also get the religious iconography, which in essence, we have that sequence where Batman is seeking the Joker, he's looking for the Joker, and the miscreant who's being beaten up at the time says, I swear to God, I don't know. Swear to me, he says, swear to me. And the first thing, of course, that Commissioner Gordon says when he's released in that unusual bondage outfit that he's obviously forced to wear of the collar, etc., is, my God, thank God, he's there, he's Batman. So you've got a religious notion of that, and the ultimate sign of being, trying both the evil and the good at the same time, the resurrection and the crucifixion, a sort of combination of the yin and yang there. Eloise, were you drawn into the film noir? You know, is it now a case of I can now look at all the Batman material with a new light?
I don't, previously not knowing much about the Joker's backstory, I found it quite interesting, and I liked the animation style with the flashbacks, the fact that the music would change to 1940s jazz and the colorization would differ from past and the future. I thought it was really interesting the way they showed the different parts of the storyline.
Jenny, back to yourself. I mean, I was sort of talking there about some of the underlying sort of things that come across there. And again, if you've actually seen the actual comic book itself, or do you ever get around to seeing it, an awful lot of the actual shots that we actually see within the comic book, I mean, I'll hold you that sort of momentarily now, you might not get a good view of that, but they do actually sort of almost act as a storyboard for the actual film itself from that point of view, which is quite nice, the acknowledgement that Brian Bolland gets an acknowledgement as the artist for writing that. And as we said, primarily, and Robin's probably a better place to talk about this, Alan Moore is somebody who basically hates every adaptation of his work, whether it's The Vendetta.
Does not like his work being adapted at all.
Whether it's Legion of Superheroes, whether it's Watchmen, don't get him started on Watchmen, any of those kind of things.
Yeah.
But again, Jenny, your thoughts in terms of the style of the movie?
Yes, as I say, it was all quite different. I enjoyed the style of the movie. I liked the music. I liked the pace of it because it was quite short and a lot happened just in the hour and the quarter. I thought it was a bit of a strange mixture of things, really, because obviously some of it was quite serious and deep. And then the one bit that I really didn't like, which I know is is in the original, was the singing. Although the character of Joker really reminded me, talking about Tim Burton, he reminded me so much of Jack Skellington from Nightmare Before Christmas. And when he started singing, I thought he sounded just like Danny Elfman. So it was a strange mix of things, and I think it kept you very entertained because it was quite fast moving, and there was just lots of different, there was sort of like humour and really sort of deep sort of things in it, and yes, some sort of graphic cruelty and humour and everything.
Yeah. I mean, I was surprised at Batgirl, effectively, that moment, which was very telegraphed on screen, where effectively she literally, after the battle with Batman, they then obviously had sex on the rooftop. I think, most unusual. It must be cold out there. Surely. Never mind. That's a different line. It's just my paternal aspects coming across on that side of things. Best line for me has to be the Joker's line about order in court, I'll have a ham and rye sandwich. Genius. That's probably one of the classics of motion picture history. Robin, we started off actually with Jessica talking about, obviously, the voice of Batgirl, played by Tara Strong, of course, same as the voice of Raven in Teen Titans. Actually, we talked about that whilst we were dealing with your phone. It's okay. But Kevin Conroy, of course, has been argued as being, the quintessential voice of the Batman. Ray Wise, best known, of course, by many as being David Leland Palmer in Twin Peaks, is Commissioner Gordon. That's before we even get on to Mark Hamill. So, a nice little balance there, I thought, in terms of the vocal cast.
I always thought that the animated series of the early 90s did very, very well with their voice casting. I mean, people like Michael Ansara as Mr. Freeze, for example, and Bees, Mark Singer as Man-Bat, they just had really, really good voices all the way through. In some of the later films, we have different actors playing Batman. Among them, I believe, David Boreanaz. Goodness me. But for those of you who are interested, if you want to see any more DC animated movies, there are to date 39 of them, of which Killing Joke is the 27th. So you've got plenty to catch up on.
What about sympathetic characters? I mean, the Joker's wife and partner, Janine, who effectively commit almost, and I think at that stage, is he going to go completely postal when she says, oh, I lost my job, oh, that's, oh, as in what? Oh, as in I had a tough time and so on. Obviously, he's on the brink from that point of view. Did we have empathy with them? Eloise, have there been moments where we thought, oh, if Alex Leftchuk tries to break into song one more time, that's it?
Yes, I did relate to her on an emotional level with you and your singing. But
me and my thing, Eloise?
Singing, I said singing.
Thank you.
That's not what I heard.
That's what I said, honest.
Yeah.
I've lost my train of thought now. It's all your fault.
Did you relate to the characters? Did you feel that they were well-drawn? Were they whole, well-rounded characters?
Yeah.
And did you like more than some more than others?
It gave the Joker a lot more depth rather than just hating him as a villain. It made you feel a lot sorry for him, seeing the reasons why and getting to see his family that he could have had. Yeah, there was a lot of extra characters that... I don't know where I'm going with this.
No, that's... I mean, again, in terms of looking at the Easter eggs, perhaps, the fact that when Batman in his Batcave is obviously the first appearance we see of Alfred and he's looking at a whole bank of shots of Joker, we've got lots of sequences there taken from the Batman movie, with the Tim Burton Batman movie, I should say, the appearance of Harley Quinn, all of those aspects. And in fact, even in the original graphic narrative, Brian Bolland puts an artist homage to Bob Kane with a sort of Batman family there on one of the sequences that's actually around from that point of view. What about sympathetic characters for yourself, Jenny? I mean, did you feel that Harvey Bullock, the commissioner's assistant, was a fine sympathetic character? We say, bring back Chief O'Hara. We mean more Chief O'Hara. And she's muted herself, you see, in the strange, wonderful way. She's giving us all sorts of wonderful things there, but on top discipline, it's great. Anyway, yes.
I felt that the Joker was the most sympathetic character, really, because they actually gave him a whole character. And you saw the sad side of his life story and of his personality, really, whereas normally... He could have been a really irritating person, but I think with the humour and the backstory and the dialogue, they made him very sympathetic.
And yet, at the end, I'm kind of left with a certain unresolution, the whole notion that the gun that he may have used to actually paralysed Barbara Gordon with just has the bang that pops out, and then he delivers the joke, which actually sets off Batman in a fit of giggles about the beam, and I'll switch the light off halfway, just watch the movie, otherwise a spoiler alert. And I thought the sound effect there of actually just the rain, something sort of wonderfully symbolic about just rain pouring down in the background, which you just think, oh, it's just happening. Jessica,
exactly how the book started and finished, though, wasn't it? With raindrops.
Yeah.
We're all raindrops in a sea of the ocean, effectively, just drops in the ocean. As I was saying, Jessica, any thoughts for yourself in terms of sympathetic characters?
Yes, in the rain.
I do agree that the Joker, he became a very sympathetic character. I think especially when Batman told him it's just you, I feel like that really showed how the Joker kind of, to me at least, it just seemed like he is very lonely in a world where he feels like he doesn't fit in. So he kind of was trying to make everyone else feel like him. But I especially liked Batgirl. This was the first time I've ever seen her in anything. So it was very interesting getting to know her character. I think she was very fleshed out.
And what about, I mean, again, it was, I think, significantly inclusive of the creators to include Barbara Gordon's friend in the library when effectively he's counselling her in terms of relationship issues, etc. I thought he was somebody that actually worked quite nicely in regarding the whole sort of system. It's interesting that, again, the other R-rated DC movie at the time was, of course, Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice, which maybe needs to be revisited, but that's another line entirely in terms of ways forward. I can see Eloise already thinking, not with me, it won't be. But who knows?
I've seen it.
Have you? Okay, yeah. Well, we'll talk and focus on that at another time. Robin, anything you'd like to add at this stage?
I think that it's, as I said before, the definitive Joker story with the definitive voice cast, especially Mark Hamill, who does such a great job. He brings the character to absolute life. Mm. He's sworn not to play the role again unless Kevin Conroy repeats Batman, and with the deep voice that he puts on as Batman as well. It's just to me, the Batman animated series is the best incarnation of Batman outside of the comic books. And I think that
Better than Gotham?
Yes. I think it might be the second best Batman movie ever made. The best being Mask of the Phantasm, which we'll have to cover one day.
It will happen, no doubt. Okay, let's try to quantify this discussion, which obviously has taken us around a range of things. Talked about the birth of Oracle. In case people are wondering, Oracle is not the CFAX-like system that used to actually be part of the BBC in terms of teletext. I know, Jessica, I might be speaking strange languages here, but there was a day pre-internet where people used to click numbers and have all sorts of text messages going on the screen. And Oracle was actually the independent version of CFAX, which the BBC used to use. Let's just rely on that. The aspect relating to Oracle, of course, that both Robin and myself have alluded to, Oracle was where Barbara Gordon became another crime fighter and actually looked after the birds of prey, of course, Black Canary and Huntress, and other photos. She was effectively the brains behind that. Thankfully, you'll all be pleased to know that she has made a full recovery and is back in Batgirl duty, I think. So, you know, thank heavens, you know, in the world of DC Universe that the mythology still continues. Anyway, let's go to Jenny. Marks out of 10 for yourself.
7. Which is the highest mark I've given on this so far.
This is impressive. Would you like to see a live-action version made of The Killing Joke? I mean, given that, obviously, if we follow the Disney line, it's only a matter of years before somebody does a live-action version.
Yes, I'm all for a live-action, definitely.
Okay.
As long as they stick to the dialogue, because I think that the dialogue was very good that they kept from the original.
Okay. Eloise?
8.5, probably.
8.5, 8.5, yeah. And for a normally Marvel, Dean Martin, Frank Sinatra, Fred Astaire aficionado, that's significant praise indeed. Of course, it's going to be a matter of, I think, 2 weeks before you're actually reviewing The Man Who Was Never Born, episode of The Outer Limits, which will be you'll be actually able to watch with Robin, if indeed, of course, lockdown restrictions are still eased and we don't go down into what Aberdeen is faced with today, in which case it's total lockdown. But still, Jessica, on a day in which Donald Trump has said he's managed to actually redo 82% of President Obama's presidency, Joker is real life and alive. This one needs a couple. I don't know. What mark would you kind of for in North Carolina? Please don't go there. Not again. It must be like being dragged through the streets with a collar, you know, with Trump on and that sort of thing. But, you know, interesting.
How so, but anyway, with angel wings.
Indeed. Marks out of 10 from yourself, Jessica Burtis, for Batman The Killing Joke.
I would say a strong 8 out of 10. I really enjoyed the story, and I thought this was a great introduction for me to Batgirl. I really enjoyed it.
Well, she's here, and as you both have to come, and you'll be pleased to know, Jessica, that she's also best friends with your other friend. Yeah, exactly. Jessica is there as well. They got back safely from Lincoln and all the other bits and pieces. I had hoped to actually check the flowers you provided for me in the office yesterday. Oh, yeah. Sadly, I was not allowed in. So there we are. That's fine for that. But, you know, we move on, and I'll be back in September. That's Lincoln anyway.
There you go.
I'm going to go with Jessica. I'm going to say 8 out of 10 for me. What are you going to score it as?
Me?
Yes.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Right, you're looking at me. Well, on a day when Donald Trump has renamed the Yosemite Park as Yosemite, I will actually give this movie 9. 9 out of 10.
I like it. It's a line that could have actually been taken out of the movie itself. As we said, co-written by Brian Azzarello and, of course, Brian Bolland, who sort of looked at the art form from that point of view, directed by Sam Liu, Batman, The Killing Joke. Next week, Robin, we're going back into the time tunnel again. We're going back into...
Time travel, Batman. Where are we going?
We are going to the Titanic. And we are going to rendezvous with yesteryear. Or was it yesterday? I think it's rendezvous with yesterday. Yesteryear was a Star Trek animated series. Yes. So rendezvous with yesterday. Jessica, are you up for rendezvousing with yesterday?
Yes, 100%.
Excellent. Jenny?
Yeah, definitely.
Marvellous.
Definitely.
And I don't know. I mean, I suppose we could actually go for 6 if Poppy's back with us on that sort of stage. So, sure. I mean, Eloise can actually build up her psyche from that sort of point of view. Eloise, would you like to come back next week for the time tunnel
and
rendezvous with yesterday?
Yes, please. Thank you.
Exactly. She'll soon be starting to teach small people, actually, Eloise. So she needs all the kind of psychological additional help we can provide her. So don't get emotional. That's an important thing. Remember, Eloise, it just takes one bad day.
When the world is full of care, and every headline screams despair, when all is rape, starvation, war, and life is vile, then there's a certain thing I do, which I shall pass along to you, that's always guaranteed to make me smile. I go looney as a light bulb battered bug, simply looney. Sometimes fold and chew the rug. Mr. Life is swell in a padded cell. It'll chase those blues away. You can trade your gloom for a rubber room and injections twice a day. Just go loony like an acid casualty, or a loony or a preacher on TV. When the human race wears an anxious face, when the bomb hangs overhead, when your kid turns blue, it won't worry you. You can smile and nod instead. When you're loony, then you just don't give a fig. Man's so puny, and the universe so big. If you hurt inside, get certified. And if life should treat you bad, don't